thank you for doing this last second, and I really appreciate it, really pulling this together. It should be an honor of the Refuah Shalema for Rachel. Should be a Refuah, everything should be okay. Okay, let's start. We started last week the concept of finding our bliss, and we said how the concept of bliss in Judaism is much different than the way much of society looks at it, the way Eastern religions may look at it, Eastern philosophy. We said it's not about having a moment of serenity. You know, that comes and goes. The idea of bliss in Judaism is finding your mission, finding your purpose. And even through the madness, even through the balagan, you can handle it because you know that it's part of your building towards something greater. And that's what we spoke about last week. This week, I want to talk about a side note to that, but I think is something that will really tie in nicely to Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. And that's the idea that once you start opening this up, what we're doing here, like looking into yourself and peeling open the layers, what if you really start digging in, you find something you don't like? I mean, that's always the search for the self is always wrought with difficulties. I know the comedian Jackie Mason always jokes around. He always says that, what if you do the search for the self and you can't stand the real you? What do you do after that? Like, where do you go from there? So I want to talk about that, looking into parts of yourself that you may not like, qualities about yourself that you aren't really into or don't want to really know too much about. The psychologist Jung called them the shadow side. Everybody has a shadow side without limitation. Everybody has one. Everybody has a dark side to them. Everybody has a dark place they can get to and they know that they can get to or they know is part of them. That's called the dark side. And what I'd like to argue today is that the way Judaism looks at it is like the color white. The color white we tend to think of as the absence of all color. But the color white is not the absence of all color. On the contrary, it's the result of the inclusion of all color. That's what white is. White is not the absence of all color. It's when you put everything together in the right combinations and everything in there, white is actually the inclusion of all that color. So what does this have to do with Rosh Hashanah? So I saw a beautiful thought from the Sefer Bilvavi Mishkan Evne. He talks about how usually one is not allowed to be yotze. One cannot use something that which is stolen. Let's say a stolen lulav. You're not allowed to use a stolen lulav on Sukkot. And you're not allowed to use, let's say, any other mitzvah. You're not allowed to have. It's called a mitzvah haba b'avera. It's a mitzvah that comes through stealing, through an avera. You're not allowed to use it. The Rambam says the exception to the rule is shofar. Now, no one's telling anybody to steal. But were you to happen to listen to a shofar that turned out was a stolen shofar, Rambam says is permissible. Why? Because the mitzvah is not litkoash b'shofar, it's not to blow the shofar, the mitzvah is lishmoa kol shofar. The mitzvah is to hear the shofar. It's not to blow the shofar, it's to hear the shofar. And therefore, the stealing happened on the item which is not really the mitzvah. The mitzvah is the result, the mitzvah is the sound that's produced. And I don't know if there's a way to steal sound. Sound is just sound. And therefore, one could be yotze. That's what the Rambam paskins. So, of course, we don't steal. But did it turn out that the guy who blew the shofar didn't realize that he was using a stolen shofar? You are yotze the mitzvah. If you didn't realize you were using a stolen lulav, you're not yotze the mitzvah. So, picking up on this difference, or the mystical underpinning of the difference, the Bilvavi Mishkan Evne says the following. We know that by korbanos, when it comes to animal offerings, you're not supposed to bring an animal that was stolen, right? It's no good. It's invalidated. And where does the Gemara get that from? So listen to this source, listen carefully. We learn that from Adam HaRishon, from Adam. Adam ki yakrev mikem. The pasuk says, when a person shall bring from you. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kishetehei makriv lafane. When you bring a korban before me, tehei ka Adam HaRishon. Since the pasuk said Adam, I want you to be like Adam. Just like Adam did not steal from others. Why didn't he steal from others? Shehu haya yechidi ba'olam. He was the only one in the world. I want the korban to come the same way, not stolen, not taken from anybody else. So when you think about that, there's two ideas that come out from there. Number one, the reason why you're not supposed to use something which is stolen, and we learn it from Adam, is because what we learn from Adam is that Adam used whatever he did for any of his mitzvahs, whatever he used in his life, he did not take it from somebody else. But the deeper teaching of how this is linked to Adam HaRishon, the deeper teaching is that stealing or not stealing should be viewed as though there are no other owners in the world except for you right now. meaning when Adam HaRishon came forward, there was nobody else who could be called a Bailim, who could be called a owner, a possessor over anything. There was nobody else. The whole concept of stealing could not exist. That's what we go back to. When we talk about the idea of a shofar, you know why shofar, you're yotze through a stolen shofar? This is what he's saying. Why are you yotze through a stolen shofar? Because there's no possibility of stealing when you go back to the beginning of creation, right? Rosh Hashanah goes back to the beginning of time, and there's no possibility of stealing at the beginning of time. The concept doesn't exist. It couldn't exist in the world, and therefore there can be nothing wrong at that time. So what do we learn from this? Rosh Hashanah is going back to a time where the concept, there couldn't be a concept of stealing, and therefore a shofar, you are yotze with stealing. Now how could that be? Doesn't that go against the very idea what Rosh Hashanah is about? So I think the idea is here, and this is true for Rosh Hashanah, and it's true for Yom Kippur, and this is true for right now, that God is asking us to uncover on this day the shadow parts of our personality, the darkest parts of ourselves. Rabbi Rishkin has a beautiful insight into the Haggadah, right? At the Haggadah, we have the Chacham, the Rasha, the Tam, the She'eni Yodei Lishol, the four kids of the Seder. Says Rabbi Rishkin, we always look at it as four different kids coming to the Pesach Seder. He says, no. They're four different parts of our own personality, and God is asking for them all to come out at the Pesach Seder. I want to see your tzaddik, your chacham, your wise one. I want to see the rebellious. Bring out your rebellious side. I want to see your simple side. When you look at, see things simply, that's this idea. This is exactly the same thing Jung was talking about. It was, go through your archetypes, go through your personality, bring them, know who you are. God wants to see them. He doesn't want you to hide them. He wants you to understand them and grapple with them and figure them out, to bring them out. On Yom Kippur we say that kitzel over, like a passing shadow. Like a passing shadow. We compare our souls, our neshamas, kitzel over, like a passing shadow. I think that image is profound when you look at it in the same way. The shadow side of things, right? That things have this, within us, in our neshama, there is this shadow, this tzel over, which is within us. And it's in all of us. Each and every one of us have this. I remember reading a historian talking about how Rembrandt would paint. It was in the Account of Visery, which was an older historian who lived in the time, I think, right after Rembrandt. And he said it was known that Rembrandt would always paint with his cap at an angle. Why? So that he could block the shadow. So he could block the shadow when he was painting. He didn't want the shadow to interrupt the canvas that he was painting. But I think Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is the opposite. We're trying to discover our shadow. You know, when you think about Yom Kippur Day specifically, there's a time when I guess the least people are on Shul Yom Kippur. You know what that is? That's right after the break, that first opening of the Torah, right after the break, the afternoon of Yom Kippur. People are just walking in, they just woke up, a lot of people haven't got there till Ne'ilah, so most people don't even know what's going on there. You know what's happening then? Right then, we're reading from the Torah. You would think at that point in Yom Kippur, we're going to read from the Torah something about angels, something powerful and profound. You know what we read then? We read about this whole list of things pertaining to illicit relationships. That's what we read at that moment, about illicit relationships. That's what we read then. At one of the holiest moments, one of the holiest points of the year, we're reading about something so dark. Because I think that's what Yom Kippur is. Hashem is asking us in Yom Kippur to bring every part of ourselves out. Bring it into the open. Don't keep it hidden anymore. Bring it all out. And that's why you read about Gilui Arayos. That's why you go the opposite extreme. Yom Kippur Day, you're supposed to imagine like you're the Kohen Gadol standing in the Beis HaMikdash. But most of us are not Kohanim. And many of us are women who couldn't even do that avoda. What's being asked of us? God says, I want you to see all the parts of your personality. The dark side of the personality, the majestic Kohen Gadol that's within all of us. Bring it all out on Yom Kippur. You know, at the beginning of Yom Kippur, we say, we ask for permission. Mutterli hitpalel im ha'avaryanim. We ask for permission to daven with the sinners. What does it mean, permission to daven with the sinners? So I saw one interpretation, beautiful. We're asking for permission to daven with our imperfect selves. The parts of us that have sinned. At the beginning of Yom Kippur, we haven't atoned for anything yet. If we haven't really atoned yet at the beginning of Yom Kippur, we're coming to God with that darkness. You know, it's like going to the mikvah. The Mishnah says when you go to the mikvah with a rodent in your hand, it doesn't do anything, the mikvah. It's tovel b'sheretz b'yado. You're still coming. So how in the world could we daven in Yom Kippur? Our davening is flawed. We're still sinners. It's an impure davening. That's why we say at the beginning of the Yom Kippur davening, permission to pray with the sinners, not the guy next to me. No, it means the part of myself, the shadow side of myself that has not been refined yet, I'm asking to bring that forward on Yom Kippur. So how do we know about what exactly are our shadows? So everybody has one. Now one aid I can give you is you could ask people in your family. Now get ready to be severely offended if you do that. I don't suggest that between husband and wife. You should get the shalom bias issues with that. But you could ask someone you trust. What's my shadow side? Tell it to me straight. What is my shadow side? What is the darkness that I sometimes have? I think that's why Judaism in Pirkei Avos emphasizes kenei lecha chaver, acquire for yourself a friend. Why? Why? I gotta pay to have acquire kenei. I gotta go ahead and pay that. Why is it so critical that I have a friend? Is Pirkei Avos telling me that I'm gonna be lonely? Is that advice? If I'm lonely, I'll get a friend. Why do I have to go out of my way to get a friend? If I want a friend, I'll have a friend. Why kenei lecha chaver? I think what it's telling you is that we all need somebody who could tell us straight what's wrong with us, who could tell us these are your shadows. These are the dark side of your personality that you have not yet uncovered, that you have not yet uncovered. When I was in Israel on my last trip, I was able to pay a visit to someone I'd only heard about. And this person is considered so holy, the irreligious cab driver refused to drop me off within 3 blocks of him. He said, I didn't go to the mikveh today, I'm scared to even get close within 3 blocks of this person. His name is Reb Chaim Cohen. He's also known as the Milkman. What a great name. The Makubal, you have to see the Milkman. Everyone knows who you're talking about. I want to see the Milkman. Why is he called the Milkman? Because for much of his life, he spent studying Kabbalah while he was milking his cows. Very unique avoda, very unique service of God that we're not used to, almost out of a Rav Shlomo Kalbach story, a hidden tzaddik milking cows all day. So he's called the Milkman, and this is his sefer. It's not white because of him. It's this Elul Tishrei, the other svarim are brown and everything else. But you see, Rav Chaim Cohen HaChalban, the Milkman. That's his name, the Milkman. You go to him, and you can see on YouTube, by the way, there's videos of him on YouTube. You type in HaChalban, and you'll see videos of Chaim Cohen. He has no beard. You wouldn't even think he's a Makubal. And there's lines out the door to see him. So he says the following. Hine ikar avodas ha'adam al nafsho hu b'shnei shlavim. A person working on themselves is in two shlavim. It's in two stages. The first is avodas ha'nefesh shel ha'adam atzmo. The first is working on your soul of you yourself. L'romeim et midosav ulakachanyot, to sanctify them more and more. Ad she'etnaig ba'atzmo k'man asuk, till you act exactly the way God, so to speak, acts. The second level is a different level altogether, which he says none of us are really close to, which is being able to influence the world as a whole. So you first, the Gemara has a line, Keshot atzmacha v'achar kach keshot acherim. Fix yourself, and then you could fix the world. Prepare yourself, and then repair the world. And he says like this, beautiful idea. Klalo shel davar, ala adam lechivun ulenavit et midosav shiyiskashru v'yachabru amashalem. Dig deep within yourself, says the Milkman. Dig deep inside of you and find everything that you're about. Everything. Expose, so to speak, all the deepest and darkest parts of yourself. Find out about them. Bring them out into the light. He says, once you discover them, then you're able to channel them in the right direction. This is exactly the same idea. We need to uncover the shadow side, the dark sides of our personality. The more we reject ourselves, the more we lack that self-acceptance. One, we're not being true to ourselves. Two, we don't even understand the potential that's within us. And says Reb Chaim Cohen, these midos that you think are bad midos inside of you, it's telling you something. It's a message. And from those traits deep inside of you, you could take them, and now you begin to have something to work with. You have something to work with. You have you. You have you to work with. There's a book called The Six Pillars of Self-Esteem. So in the book of Six Pillars of Self-Esteem, I don't remember the other five, I know that number two was self-acceptance. Self-acceptance. That doesn't mean tolerate your negativity and keep perpetuating it. But self-acceptance means accept these are the cards that you've been dealt. This is my character traits. This is my personality. These are my natias. I'm not that person. I'm not the Chafetz Chaim, or I am who I am. That doesn't mean I sell myself short. It means acknowledge who you are. And once you acknowledge what's within you, then you could begin the process. Then everything begins. Then all of life changes. Everything begins to fall into place, because then the work begins of figuring out what your personal avoda is, what your personal mission is. So that was part one. One is uncovering the shadow side. We'll talk more about that in a moment. But I think there's another part of this process that can get scary as well. The Torah tells us, last week's parsha, that all the brachas shall come upon you, and they will, the article translates it hisigucha as overtake you. But you look at the word hisigucha, the shorish really means like hasaga, it'll challenge you. All the blessings will challenge you. What does that mean? All the blessings that God gives you, they will challenge you. Blessings are great. The curses are going to challenge me. Will I keep my faith? Will I stay strong? The blessings are not going to challenge me. That's going to propel me to go further. What's the blessings going to challenge me? What does that mean? Says the Kotzker Rebbe, in our lives, the biggest challenge are the blessings that God has given us. What to do with the things, the gifts, what to do with the gifts that God has given us in our lives, what to do with them, how to make use of them, how to employ them in the service of God. That's the greatest challenge. That's the hisigucha. That's why the brachas themselves are the challenge. We know people who are given such gifts and wasted them their whole lives, just wasted them, did nothing, untapped, unrealized potential, or instead used it. There's a great story. The Belzer Rebbe used to say it on Purim night. It was about the Baal Shem Tov. How there was someone who was having trouble, whether it was fill in whichever version of the Hasidic story, having trouble having children, having trouble at Parnassa, and they went to the Baal Shem Tov and said, please help, please do what you can. And the Baal Shem Tov said, I'm looking into your soul and I know it's beyond me. I can't do a thing for you. And the guy went away so sad and dejected. Oh my gosh, like, this is my life, this is my fate. And the Baal Shem Tov says, wait. There's a holy Jew whose name is Chaim, and he lives two towns over. You could find him in the back of the tavern in town. So the Jew thought that the Baal Shem Tov lost it. The holy Tzaddik must have lost it. He's sending me two towns over to find a guy named Chaim who's sitting in the back of a tavern. He walks in to the, he goes two towns over, so the Baal Shem Tov says, I do it. He goes over two towns over, and he walks into the tavern, and he sees a wild drunk in the back of the bar. Wild drunk. And he asks, anybody know where I could find the holy Chaim? So they started laughing. The holy Chaim? Well, the only Chaim in this tavern is the drunkard in the back throwing his beer all over everybody. That's the only Chaim here. And the Jew thinks, oh, I just been, the holy Baal Shem Tov, I don't know what he did, sent me on a wild goose chase. But he says, you know what, I'll go. He goes to Chaim, his Chaim, Reb Chaim. The Baal Shem Tov said, I need a bracha from you. And he, the Reb Chaim falls on his face, throws the table over, his drinks fly everywhere. And the guy's about to leave the bar, and someone stops him and says, that is the holy Reb Chaim. He goes, you serious? But he's so drunk. He said, if you can get him sober, you'll have the greatest bracha you've ever had in your life. So he gets pays off. There's a big guy there at the bar, and he pays him off, and he says, let's hold him down. They tie him down to a chair, and they keep him off any drinks. They sober him up. They give him bread and water for a day and a half. And all of a sudden, he comes to, and Reb Chaim lifts his head and says, I give you a bracha of parnasa. I give you a bracha of children. And he leaves. The Jew leaves, and that year, sure enough, success comes his way, and he turns to the Baal Shem Tov and says to his Rebbe, Rebbe, Why would God give such power into the hands of a drunkard? And the Baal Shem Tov says, some people, if they recognize their light, if they recognize their strength, they'd be too afraid of it. Says the Belzer Rebbe when he told it Purim night, there's a famous teaching from the Zohar, that Yom Kippur is so holy, Yom Kippurim, it's like Purim. What does it mean it's like Purim? When you hear that line, Yom Kippur, Yom Kippurim, it's like Purim. When you say Yom Kippur is like Purim, it means which one's holier? Purim. Yom Kippurim. It's like, it's not, it's almost, it's like Purim. The day we drink, the day we're running around in costumes and everything, says the Belzer Rebbe, God kept you busy with all these things on Purim, because if you recognize the light that Purim has, it would be too intense for you. It would be too much. If you recognize how holy Purim is, it'd be overwhelming. So I think that's another fear we have. On one hand, we're afraid to uncover the shadow within all of us. But on the other hand, we're sometimes afraid of our intense light. We're afraid of the light that's in each of us. We're afraid of doing something because we might stand out, and then people are going to recognize us. Just like Reb Chaim in the back of the tavern. He didn't want everybody to know him as the one who's able to give out brachas just like this. Just like Vayavo Alecha Kol HaBrachas VeHisigucha. Just like the concept of all the brachas will be a challenge for you. Sometimes the brachas, they themselves are the challenge. You know, I always wondered if you have to think for a moment about all the superheroes. I love superheroes. If you think about all the superheroes, there's one whose other character is Mamish Bittelsman. It's a waste of time. Meaning, I understand why Batman needs Bruce Wayne, right? He needs to get into society, he needs to have the money, the connections, I got it. Okay? What I never understood, the one thing that never made sense, is why Superman needed Clark Kent. There's no need. What?
So he could see what's going on in the world to help him where it's...
Stay Superman, the whole day, walk around, patrol as Superman. He could be Superman all day, he could have everything. He could have a job if he wants to hold down a job.
But he could get in a news place, so then he finds out what...
You don't think a news place can let Superman sit in the back of the news place? He could sit. I'm sure he can get a spot at a good news place. If he'll work for free, he'll get whatever he wants. Why does he really need Clark Kent? What does he really need Clark Kent for? So I thought, it dawned on me when I saw a quote, a poem. This is by an author, Marianne Williamson. Our deepest fear is not that we're inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It's our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. I think pshat is that Superman turns to Clark Kent because he wants the Nebuch, because he's afraid of being too powerful. He's afraid of all of his light, and therefore, because of it, he turns back to that person. This is us. This is us. We're afraid of the dark side of ourselves. We're afraid of the shadow side. But we're also afraid of being too matzliach, of being too successful, of leading something in a community because of what it might entail, what people might say about us when we do that job, what may result because of it. We're afraid sometimes of our potential. Let's move to a new step. We talked about this dark side. But I want to tell you, it's not really dark. Because in Judaism, it's not about getting rid of it. It's about taking it and shifting the trajectory in the right way. You know, when we talk about fixing our midos, we don't say siluk hamidos. It's never called removing your bad traits. Nowhere in Musar or in the Gemara is it called removing your bad traits. You know what it's called? It's called tikun hamidos. It's called shipur hamidos. It's improving. It's fixing. It's not getting rid of. No one asks you to purge you. The rabbis never ask you to purge your essence and what you're about. All you are asked to do is to take it and shift it in the right direction. That's tikkun hamidos. You know, the Gemara in Yoma, Ayin Gimel, tells us that when you do tshuva out of love, so then your sins become positives. Not just neutralized. Your sins become positives. How does that work? Your sins, what if that was like a game? How does that work? You did some bad things. You did tshuva, it turned to positive. Says Rav Soloveitchik, it's a beautiful explanation. Beautiful. When you do tshuva out of love, what happens is, God says you're now learning how to take the energy, the passions of all the bad things you did and turning it and using it towards good. Correction on tshuva isn't about replacing you with somebody else. It's taking your authentic self that you've always been and learning how to use it for good. So when you start doing good, let's say for a week after Yom Kippur, you know how you're doing good if you do it right? You're doing it because you're using the same energies that you used when you were doing bad. It's the same. You know, you see it sometimes. Rav Soloveitchik says sometimes with a Baal Tshuva. Rav Soloveitchik says he wasn't into a Baal Tshuva replacing their old name. You want to add a name, add a name. Don't get rid of your whole past. Why? He says, what got you to where you are today? You know what got you to where you... There's something stubborn in you that your parent gave you as a character trait that's in you that got you to one day say, I'm going to be stubborn and I'm going to go against everything from my youth. It didn't come out of nowhere. The character traits that allowed you to be a Baal Tshuva were there somewhere inside of you and therefore allowed you to turn in that direction. How could you chuck the past? The past is what made you who you are today. And by the way, I heard in a tape from Rabbi Akiva Tatz, Baal Tshuva talking to their parents, who are now don't know how to cope with their kid becoming so meshuga. How do they? So he said, when you speak to your parents, you turn to them and say, this is who you raised me. You raised me to find a value and be committed to it. You might have a slightly different value, but we share many of the same values, but you taught me to be committed to what I believe in. You gave that to me. It's their gift. It is the parents' gift. As much as we think we're running away from a past, what we're learning from all this, from Chaim Kohn, the Bilvavi, we're not running from any past. We're choosing to understand our past and knowing how to use it the right way. Such a beautiful line from Oprah. Oprah had a great line. She said a commencement speech. Oh, she was a good zinger. Oprah said the following. She said, turn your wounds into wisdom. Turn your wounds into wisdom. Make your past, make the things that happen to you, your negative traits, turn them into a chachma. Let them inform you about how to act in this world. They're here to teach you something. That's the pasuk. We have the pasuk, kol atzmo sai tamarna. All my bones will praise you. How are all our bones praising God? So some want to say that teaches you you're supposed to shuckle when you daven. But maybe kol atzmo sai tamarna, all my bones praising you. You know what it means? It means that everything I've done, somehow, at some deep level, is speaking about a gift that God gave me. That's turning your wounds into wisdom. You know, Parshas Metzora, we find it about the house that could have leprosy. It's a rare thing. The Gemara says it might never have happened ever, except for a short period in history, that you can go to a house, right? It says, V'nasata nega tzaras, b'beit eretz achuz aschem. When you have tzaras on your house, right, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to break down the walls of the house. Why? Rashi says, because in the walls of the house, you're going to find the people who lived in Israel before you, the Amorim, put gold in the wall. They put gold in the wall. So what does this mean? So why would God give you the punishment that tzaras on the house so you shatter it to get to the gold? So you know what it means? Says the Orech HaShulchan, shatter your walls. Sometimes you have to break down your security, the walls you've put up. You have to put up the suppression, you know, the things, the story you've told yourself. Sometimes you have to break those down, and it's painful. It's like tzaras. Sometimes you have to break those down, but it's the only way you're going to get to the gold that's inside. That's the message of the tzaras on the house. You break through the walls, the Beis Eretz Achuz Aschem, because the process of breaking, you turn your wounds into the wisdom. By going into yourself, you're going to find something powerful. Find something powerful. So let's talk. Last time I like to finish with practical, you know, bottom line, like really, so what do we do? What do I do? So there's, I think it was called The Power of Full Engagement, The Power of Self-Engagement by Jim Lohr. He had a great idea, a great insight into exploring ourselves, our shadow side and everything. And this really plays really well with everything we believe as well. The things that most bother you in other people, the things that drive you crazy about other people, that you can't stand in other people, that you judge about other people, stop whenever you see it and ask yourself, how am I that? How am I that? What a great insight. How am I that? Any bad midah you see, stop and say, before you criticize it, before you attack it, ask yourself, okay, God created me with the full spectrum, all midos, all qualities, every character trait. In some level, I'm white, remember? I'm the collection of all colors. How am I that? And specifically, if something is bothering you, says the Baal Shem Tov, if something is bothering you in somebody else, Baal Shem Tov says, it's probably in you. Right? Shlomo Kaulbach made that Baal Shem Tov famous in his famous Schwarze Wolf story. A great story, but the pinnacle of the story is when he says that the person came to the house and the owner of the house looks so ugly. And he said, the Baal Shem Tov teaches that if somebody looks ugly, it's because inside of you is that ugliness. And if somebody is beautiful, it's because inside of you is that. Life is a mirror. You see things through a mirror. And that's the idea here. If you see a negative character trait, and almost it's probably bothering you because it says something about you. You understand? I once was walking by, and then someone, it was a bum on the street. A bum on the street said, you dirty Jew. And I remember it didn't offend me. Now, why did it not offend me? It didn't offend me because I obviously assume this person is so far from who I am and so crazy that it didn't touch me. It looked at it, to me it was like Nebuch. But when something offends you, it offends you because that is in your possibility. That can be you. That is something you are capable of doing, and that's why it drives you crazy. It's touching a wound in deep inside of you. And when you could ask yourself, how am I that? You could begin the process of improvement. Begin the process of improvement. I'll tell you a great Hasidic story. Oh, I love this one. This is from Simcha Bunim Pshischa. Twins, two brothers go over to visit they go walk with their grandfather, and the grandfather takes them around and he sees a farm, he sees a barn, and they go into the barn, and inside the barn smells terrible. And one brother says, "Let's get out of here. This smells horrendous. All the manure. This is horrific. Let's get out of here." And the other brother says, "Wait. If you smell manure, there must be a pony in there somewhere. If you smell manure, there must be a pony in there somewhere." What an amazing perspective. That in that negative, in that darkness of that character trait, whether you see it in others, it can reflect of something very positive, something very strong, and something very empowering. I close with the Apta Rebbe. The Apta Rebbe, the Avodas Yisrael, says the following. The Ov Yisrael. There's so much darkness in our lives, darkness in our world. And the world has never been without that darkness. But darkness, Choshech, it's the throne upon which light must sit. It's the throne upon which light must sit. So that's the Ikar Nekuda. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, we're going to hopefully open parts of ourselves that we're afraid to look at. It's not just about acknowledging how we wrong someone during the year. It's going much further. It's going to the core, where that midah comes from, why I do that, why I keep doing that over and over, why I keep repeating this pattern, what does it say about me? And when you uncover, we're not asked to ignore our shadow. We're not asked to destroy our shadow. We're asked to take our shadow, understand it, and say, what gold is in there? What positive quality could I learn from that midah? What could I do with that midah and use it in a positive way? What's it teaching me about my life and who I am? And when I could accept myself for who I am, that I'm not somebody else. I am this basic idea, and learn how to use it. Shift the trajectory, as Rav Soloveitchik said, as the Gemara said. Take the Zidonios, the Nasik Ischuyos, turn it into merits, then we've achieved the Ikar Avoda of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. The idea of uncovering the shadow, not being afraid to uncover the light, not being afraid to uncover the dark, it's all part of who we are. We're just being asked to learn how to use it the right way. Okay, Yeshua Koach. Thank you.